Okay, so my name is Shelley Grafstein. I made Aliyah from Toronto, Canada, 12 and a half years ago with my five kids, and I was married at the time, and with my husband. And we first moved to Ramat Beit Shemesh. We lived there for 9 years, and 3 years ago we moved to Beit Shemesh. So our house, it's all instrumental to the story. So our house faces this gorgeous, gorgeous field and a monastery, and behind us is the Ethiopian neighborhood, Nofe Aviv. Okay. And right behind us is the Ethiopian neighborhood of Beit Shemesh. And it's a very interesting neighborhood. It's a mix of the modern young Ethiopians and the older Ethiopians who came directly from Ethiopia. And a lot of the older men, this is part of the story, they wear like sneas togas. It looks like they wear these white sheets over their head and wrap themselves with white sheets around their body, and they carry canes. Okay. So we moved to our home. We moved in the summer. And right after that, there was that horrible, horrible tragedy in New York with the Sassoon family, with the fire. And I ran out and I bought one smoke detector. I didn't even install it properly. We moved into a two-story home, and I put it on a bookshelf outside my bedroom. And that was my fire prevention to date. And at the time of the story, I had my five kids living at home. My 23-year-old daughter was studying Chinese medicine. My 20-year-old son was a medic in a combat unit in the Army. He was just starting his second year. I had two daughters, 17 and 15, in high school, and my 12-year-old son, a month before his bar mitzvah, was in junior high school. Okay, so the story takes place the Thursday night after Pesach. That year, Pesach ended on a Friday, so we had to keep Pesach dik over that Shabbos. So I made my challah with my key in it as a segula for parnasa. I made sure I shut off my oven, and I went to bed. I was babysitting two dogs, and I have two dogs. So in my room with me were four dogs, and I went to sleep at around 11 o'clock at night. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I hear that I'm a lousy sleeper. Thank God I'm a lousy sleeper. So I woke up in the morning and to this noise of a pss noise. And I actually would have just totally ignored it, except it was followed literally a second by the shrieking of the smoke detector. My dogs, all four dogs, did not say a peep. They were totally silent. Anyways, I thought I'd better go to investigate. So I jumped out of bed. And as I walk out of my room, I can smell something, I can hear something, and as I'm walking further, I can hear the smoke, literally hear the smoke barreling up my staircase. So my kids had all fallen asleep they slept through the smoke detector, and I'm screaming, kids, you have to wake up, there's a fire in the house. And needless to say, they all ran up and were beside me. And those probably 2 seconds that it took, the whole front hallway was so full of smoke, we could not see a thing. There were handprints of us trying to find the staircase because our first thought was, we'll run out the front door. Literally, just shut your eyes as tight as you can, and that's what it was like. We had no clue where the staircase was. And thank God we didn't go down the staircase because there's no way we would have made it out. We would have gotten lost in the house. So we decided we would run into my room because that's where the dogs were. And we shut the door to my room. And I turned on my shower. I had an ensuite, so I turned my shower on just to try to clear some of the smoke. And we have a cat, and our cat was on the outside of the door screaming, meowing hysterically. And my kids were crying, Mommy, you have to open the door. Dobby's outside, and I wouldn't let them open the door. In my mind, I was thinking it was a gas fire because I had heard this sound. And we come from Canada. I only thought of gas fires. I didn't know there was such a thing as an electrical fire. And I was terrified to open my window because oxygen feeds a gas fire. And I was so afraid that the roof would blow up. Anyways, the smoke got too thick for us to even contemplate not opening the window. Like, we just couldn't breathe. So we opened the window, and my daughter, thank God, had brought her phone with her, and I had my phone. And she called the fire department, and she is giving the fire department instructions to our house because they are insisting that we live in Ramapi Chemish in another part. And I hear her saying, no, we don't live there. And she's literally giving them instructions on how to get from the fire department to our home. I call one of my neighbors who's a Kablan, who has done work in our house, and I know he has a very tall ladder. And I figured he could take this ladder and save us. Okay, so I'm just going to go to his side of the story for a second. Unfortunately, he had a terminally ill son. At the time, his son was 13 years old, and he had just come back from the hospital at 3 in the morning. And he told his wife, Esther, I'm exhausted. I'm putting my phone on vibrate. Don't wake me up under any circumstance unless it's a hospital calling me with bad news. I just don't, I just need my sleep. So he puts his phone on vibrate, which he never does, and he goes to sleep. Thank God he answered his phone to hear me say it in my horrible Hebrew, there's a fire in my house, you have to come and save us, we're gonna die. So he and his wife come running across the street, literally from me to the lady in the striped shirt, it was like that close, and he comes running without his ladder, but he comes running. And his wife, whose brother is a fireman, her brother is a fireman in New York, so she had some fire knowledge. So she yelled to us, can you try to unlock the sorghum? The sorghum are the bars on the windows. So we go to see if it's locked. I have no idea at the time if it's locked, and my daughter touches the sorghum and they swing open. In the summer when we first moved in, my young son had said to me, Mommy, the view from your bedroom window is so gorgeous. Let's look and see if we can find a key to open up the sorghum. Our sorghum in all the bedrooms had sorghum that have locks that you can open, which I'd never heard of, actually. In our old house in Ramapi Chemish, they are bolted shut. So we had taken the key from the downstairs and opened the sorghum. I have absolutely no idea where the key was at that stage, nor would I have ever been able to get a hold of it. Anyways, the sorghum open, and Esther, the neighbor's wife, tells us to take the sheets off our bed and to tie it on the sorghum and to shimmy down, and they will catch us. So I say, okay, thank God, thank God. And so I say to my kids, okay, we can escape. So I have three kids with me, and my 12-year-old says, I can't go first. Jamie, my oldest daughter, she's seen someone. She has a future. She should go first. And Jamie said, I can't go first. I'm older than you. My middle daughter's saying, well, I'm just a student. I have nothing but Bezalel. He has a future. Like, what do I need to live for? So I have three kids fighting over who wants to go first. Anyways, I finally said, youngest to oldest. And my window is about chest level. So we, you know, helped them jump up through the window. They had to crawl through the window, grab the... I tried to reenact it yesterday, and I couldn't actually get up to the window. It's amazing what adrenaline does. Anyways, they shimmy down, and they caught them. As my kids are escaping, I realized my son, who's in the Army, he was home for the weekend, but he usually stays out in Yerushalayim very, very, very late. I thought, you know what? If he comes home and sees fire trucks on our street, and, you know, eventually the fire trucks are going to come. If he sees fire trucks on our street, he is going to freak out. So I call his phone, and instead of saying the line is busy or he answering it, it says the phone that you have called is no longer in service. So my heart went into my throat, and I yelled to Itzik, Itzik, I think Akiva may be in the house. So my daughter tells Itzik the code. I had no idea. Usually when Akiva comes home, he bolts the door, like the safety bolt. But we gave Itzik the code, not knowing whether he could even get in. So meanwhile, I'm shimmying down, and we have to say that at that stage, Itzik was in two places at once. Because for sure, Itzik caught me, because I have bruises. I had bruises all along my leg from when he caught me when I jumped. He was in the house at the same time. So Itzik runs to the house, he does a code, and the door opens, and he is greeted literally with a wall of fire and a wall of smoke. And he can't get in. And he tries three times, and he goes in a little bit, and he can't breathe. He comes back, and he was in search and rescue in the Army, and he knows what he needs to do. So he's yelling to Akiva, Akiva, everything is fine. Your family is waiting for you. Come, I'm going to help you. And Akiva answers, Itzik, Itzik. And Then he yells again. Itzik's yelling, Akiva, Akiva, don't worry, everything is under control. And Akiva doesn't answer. So Itzik realized he has no choice. If he's going to save my son, he has to go in. So he backs out a little bit, and there's a sheet right at my front door. It's also a crazy story. But he takes this white sheet, he wraps it around his face, and he literally barges through a wall of smoke and fire. He knows where Akiva sleeps because, as I said, he has done work in our room, in our house. You walk in my house, there's a front door, there's a little bit of a hallway, the living room is to the left, the kitchen is to the right, and off the kitchen is our mamad where Akiva sleeps. And he feels something after 5 meters, he feels something clamp his foot. He realizes it's Akiva. He picks Akiva up like a football, charges out of the door, and literally heaves Akiva outside into the fresh air. So Akiva hits the air, and he can start to breathe. So the Akiva's story is, he came home at 3:45. So this is literally not even 20 minutes after Akiva came home. He decided that, I get up early. I get up at 5 to walk the dogs. He thought, you know, I'm not going to bolt the door. Mom's going to be up in an hour. He went to the mamad. He locked the mamad door, charged his phone on the phone charger, put the phone right beside his bed, and was about to go to sleep. And he said, there was a voice that said, Mommy will kill me if I lock the mamad door. She will literally kill me. So he gets up and he unlocks the mamad door. And then he went to sleep. And he said, Mommy, I woke up. I don't remember anything. He was stark naked. He was on the floor on his hands and knees. And he said, Mommy, I was breathing fire. And then I don't remember anything. So the firemen believe it was his phone charger. I'm going to show you pictures. But there was so little left of his room that they could not do a proper forensic investigation because mamash, there was so little left. Almost every single thing in his room burnt or melted. The couch melted, the TV melted, the aronot melted, the metal desk, someone had given us a metal desk from their office, a metal desk melted. The mamad window, which is supposed to withstand missiles and bombs, melted, okay? Akiva had his gun. When you're in the army and you bring your gun home, you have to dismantle it and put the gun in different spots and the bullets in different spots. So Akiva had dismantled his gun and one was under his mattress, one part was under his mattress, one was under the couch, and the bullets were in various parts of the room. His gun totally melted, and he is in a room with 50 bullets discharging because it was so hot in that room. So there he is, unconscious, and we could see afterwards, embedded in the wall are 50 bullets. Okay, so yeah, I can see by these women's expressions that it was really, really crazy. So basically, every single thing in the room was incinerated, including the clothes on his body. Akiva did not have one hair burnt. There's no other word other than a miracle. His clothes burnt off of him. His skin was not burnt. But the room itself, too, was a toxic disaster with all these chemicals that were burning. So at this time, so he is conscious now on the outside of the house, and we hear the fire trucks careening down the street. So the first thing the fireman says is, anybody in the house? And I realized my 17-year-old daughter, she was supposed to sleep in Jerusalem, but sometimes if she's not feeling well, she comes home and goes to bed, and we don't know. And then I thought, oh my God, what happens if Meira is in bed? So I screamed to the fireman, oh my God, my daughter may be in the house. So they go to charge in the house, and Akiva at the stage, Itzik, our neighbor, had draped Akiva in this white cloth, and Akiva is pitch black. So the firemen go to enter the house, and they see this Ethiopian man, / Akiva, standing at the door saying, you can't come in, there's bullets, you'll get shot. And they picked Akiva up and pushed him to the side, and they charged in the house looking for Meira. They turned every, kolikova to them, they were flipping the mattresses over, they took everything out of our cupboards and threw it on the floor in case a kid had crawled behind the clothes to breathe. Thank God she actually answered her phone on the second time we called, because she wasn't expecting a call, obviously at 4 o'clock in the morning. And she said she was in Yerushalayim, she was fine. So thank God. So the firemen, they put out the fire in the house, and the fire, that Mata is coming to take us to the hospital, and they see this Ethiopian man with us, so they keep pushing Akiva away, like go away, go away. And we had to explain to him, no, this is the injured soldier, like he's the most injured. So they put Akiva and my other son, I don't know if you know it, there's two types of ambulances. One is the white ambulance and one is the trauma ambulance. So they put Akiva in the trauma ambulance and we're going in the other ambulance, and they take us to Asaf HaRofa, which is usually a 45-minute drive. It took about 20 minutes. And they have, I just have to get the word because I keep forgetting, they have hyperbaric chambers there, which are chambers for people who are suffering from toxic gases. And it's like being in a decompression chamber. It's a very, very hard pressure on your chest, and you breathe out the toxic gases, and you breathe in oxygen. It was when they admitted Akiva, he was admitted with carbon monoxide poisoning. We were put in one part of the hospital to receive oxygen. My levels of oxygen were 50. Oxygen should be between 95 and 100. So we were all low. Akiva's was 19. And his carbon monoxide levels, they should be, carbon monoxide should be, not should be, but normal range is 0.5 to 1.5, and Akiva's was 9.8. So they whisked him away, and they wouldn't tell me how he was. Like I kept saying, I have to find, how was my, I didn't know if Akiva had made it. I knew at the time the way he was acting was all adrenaline, because we were all totally high on adrenaline. I had no idea if Akiva was going to make it. Anyways, they put him right away in the hyperbaric chamber. On the way to the hyperbaric chamber, there's an Ethiopian orderly taking Akiva, and he starts speaking to Akiva in the Ethiopian language. You'll see pictures. Akiva Mamash was pitch black, like totally, totally crazy. Anyways, we were on oxygen. We were released after 6 hours, and Akiva had to stay in several days in this hyperbaric chamber. He had to go in for 6 hours, out for 6 hours, in for 6 hours. So the Army actually paid for me. They have a hotel on Asaf HaRofa premises, and they paid for me to stay at the hotel as long as Akiva was in the hospital. So I lit candles on his ward, and I have to tell you, this was hours after the fire, and I have to tell you, when you light candles and you realize that you've just been through such a trauma, and it was a nace that I was there, it was a nace that my kids were there, it was a nace that Akiva was alive and basically unharmed. I mean, he had temporary lung damage, but he was alive. Anyways, the nurse came running out to see if I was okay, because when I was saying my brachas, I was hysterical. All that emotion just came out, and I've never ever had that emotion of thank you God. I mean, I say Moda Ani every day with Kavana, but nothing topped the Kavana that I had when I lit the candles. Akiva was on portable oxygen for about a month, maybe 6 weeks, but for about a month after, he was coughing up soot. When I say coughing up soot, it's not like his phlegm was black. He was coughing up chunks. It looked like he had taken cubes of charcoal and eaten them and was spitting up chunks of charcoal. And for about 6 months after, he said, Mommy, I feel like my left lobe of my lung is still full of ashes. And it probably was. But thank God, 3 years later, he is totally fine. Anyways, when we were released, we went back to the house. I wanted to find out what was left of our house, if anything. I was afraid to ask about our pets, because there was our two pets, our cat, the two dogs I was babysitting. And thank God, I don't know what miracle, that they must have been hiding under my bed, but when the firemen were looking for my daughter, they all ran out and escaped. And one of my neighbors collected them all, and they were all as black as this. One of my dogs is pure white. They were pitch black, but they were alive, and they were also fine. But when we walked into the house, there was at least this much soot and ashes over the whole house. The windows and the doors and the walls were peeling. Everything was peeling from the intensity. Our kitchen is about 5 meters from the source of the fire. And we think Akiva unlocked the Mamad door, but he didn't open it up. That the pressure of the fire was so great, it blew open the Mamad door, because the Mamad door was partially melted. but it blew out the windows located 5 meters away, the force, and that's like the fire just like shot that way. Our kitchen cupboards, we had just renovated our kitchen, it wasn't even finished, but all our cupboards had melted, even the new cupboards that were supposed to go in that were in the back room were melted, and there was soot everywhere. Like soot permeates everything, even clothes that we had put away for the winter that were in boxes and cupboards permeated everything. And basically everything we owned was destroyed except our photo albums and our baby books. And I don't know how, because they were wet. The firemen, when they sprayed the hose, they were wet, but they survived. Anyways, the firemen contacted me after we were released to say that there's an official report that we have to file, and when Akiva is up to it, to file the report. So we just wanted to get it done. So we made an appointment when Akiva was released, and we went to the fire station. Every fireman who was not out on a call, at that time it was actually every fireman was in the fire station, they lined up as if they were greeting a king. And most of the firemen in Beit Shemesh are not religious. They gave Akiva, each one, hugs and kisses. Non-religious guys were saying, you have to bench Gomel. They were crying. They said, we've been to fires. We have never, ever seen a miracle like this. Even the fire, I forget his name, like the fire inspector for the whole of this part of Israel, said that he went to investigate the fire. He said, never, ever has he seen a miracle of this proportion. One of the firemen told us that we were so lucky the sorgim were unlocked. He said so many times they get to a fire, they put the ladder up. By the time they saw the sorgim, they can see the people in the window. They were like us, the people are in the window. By the time they saw the sorgim, the people are gone. It's literally seconds. In a fire, every single second counts. Anyways, I think first we went to Yad Sara because Akiva couldn't breathe. The hospital released him without portable oxygen. And Akiva said the whole time it felt like an elephant was sitting on his chest. So we went to rent portable oxygen tanks. I think you've probably seen them. Older people sometimes have them, the oxygen with the tubes. And a senior citizen was helping us, and she said, why do you need it? And I said, well, it's not for me, it's for my son. He was in a fire. And she said, oh my God, was he the soldier that was in the fire? And I said, yes. So she runs to her purse. Now, I'm sure you guys all know that seniors on pensions do not get a lot of money. And she reached into her purse and she pulled out a 100-shekel note, and she literally pressed it into my hands, and she said, please, he had nothing. Mamash, he had nothing. Every single thing he owned was incinerated. Please buy him something special, something that he wants. Buy him something for me. Anyways, I fell into her. I'm not such a big crier, but I fell into her arms. I was crying. Like, it was such a nice gesture. Anyway, from there, then we went to buy Akiva some clothes because our neighbors had given him some clothes to wear, and he felt kind of like a bag man. So we go to the local store, and he didn't want to be in a big crowd or anything, so he went to the store we had never been in, and Akiva schlepping his portable oxygen tanks. And the woman at the store says, oh, do you have bad asthma? And Akiva said, no, last week I was in a fire. And she said, on Friday? And Akiva said, yes. And she said, oh my God, my husband is a fireman, and he was one of the firemen in your fire. And he actually woke me up when he came home from the fire to say, I forget her name, let's say Yael, I just witnessed an open miracle. It was really, really crazy. And the following Shabbos, we were at my neighbor's house, the one who saved us, and my kids look out the window and they see the sheet is still hanging, the sorgim are open, the window is open, and the sheet is hanging. So one of my kids says, oh my God, that's so dangerous. Like, we're going to get robbed. Like, we should really take the sheet and lock the window. We all looked at them and said, robbed? They'll probably die before they, you know, get out of the room like that. It's so toxic in there. It was, like, really a toxic nightmare. Anyway, on a more mundane level, it was a miracle that I had both structural and content insurance. When I got divorced, I slashed all my expenses because I needed to watch every shekel, and I thought, content insurance, like, do I really, really need content insurance? And I'm really cautious, and I thought, okay, you know what, I'll keep it. I took a few things out, but I kept it, and thank God, because I really don't know what I would have done, because the repair, it was close to 1 million shekels between the damages of the structure and the damages of the content. So it was a lot of money. So where did we live while our house was being rebuilt? That's another miracle. My brother had bought an apartment in Talpiot that he wanted to rent out as an investment. And it was supposed to have been ready this September before our fire. And you know how it goes in Israel. It's not ready, it's not ready. And it was ready the week before our fire. And my brother decided he wanted to rent it furnished. So he had just ordered furniture, and the furniture was delivered the Wednesday after our fire, okay? The Wednesday after. Had it been rented and available, had it been available in September, it would have been rented. It wouldn't have been available to us. Insurance told us it would take 4 to 6 weeks to rebuild our house. We were in my brother's apartment for 9 months, okay? And we could bring our dogs. So we had the two dogs. We couldn't bring the cat. My sister-in-law took the cat. But there was six of us in this apartment with the two dogs, and we could stay there as long as we wanted. Like, that was also such a miracle. And with the first day we were in my brother's house, and I say to my daughter, one of my daughters, you know what, Malka, I just remembered, we have the key to our house from the Shisal Halal I did before the fire. And we had such a good laugh because I had the front key, but we didn't have a door, we didn't have a house. Like, that was my connection to our house. Anyway, I spent hours and hours after the fire researching fires and what I could do and how we could have prevented it. I did find out that our sorghum are considered death traps. They're illegal in most parts of the world because they literally trap you in. They may keep burglars out, but they trap you in. So I had all our sorghum cut so we could push them open. So they don't really deter anybody unless they deter people unless they want to rattle them and see that there's nothing there. But if you do have a lock, if your sorghum open, what I've advised everybody, when I reenacted it for the video, so this is a reenactment. I was shaking so badly that I couldn't find, here's a lock and my hand is like this, and the likelihood of dropping a key, and you can't get the key once it falls, like, it's impossible. So I've told everybody to keep a key very close by the lock, put it on a gumi that you can buy. So God forbid, if you do drop it, you can catch it from the gumi, because if it's not attached, you can't find it. Don't put it on some hook where you have to stand on a ladder. You literally have seconds. So please, everybody, buy smoke detectors. You're supposed to have one for every room in the house. My kids slept through it. In America, they have these smoke detectors where you can actually record your voice that says, children, exactly what I said, children, get up, there's a fire in the house, and that has a much higher response rate. They're not available here, but buy a smoke detector for every room, because you just literally never know. Make sure you have a fire escape plan and a backup, and hopefully another backup. They say a smoke detector in every room, at least every room where you sleep, where people could sleep, a guest room, bedrooms. Pardon?
No, but the smoke
wouldn't out there. No, well, mine went everywhere. Like, you'll see pictures, literally everywhere. Buy house insurance. Buy life insurance. I know a lot of people don't buy life insurance. Buy life insurance, because we all know, you just mamash, never know. Okay, and candles. I know it's coming up to Hanukkah, and I'm going to probably say something totally sacrilegious, but I'm doing it from a safety standpoint. Do not ever, ever leave candles lit when you go out. Light them in the sink, or light them on a massive metal tray, because after my research, Kemat, every fire is started by something preventable. And fire, leaving candles burning, rank up there at the top. And don't ever leave anything charging on a soft surface, because the chance of spontaneous fire, curling irons. I've saw so many videos of curling irons. Women curl their hair and throw the curling iron on the pillow. 2 seconds it takes. Okay, and be grateful. Yeah? Yes. This was behind the TV. The sofer who came to all our mezuzahs were pestled because of the smoke. This is my father. This is my son's tefillin case. My deceased father's tefillin was in it. This was behind the TV on the desk that melted. We didn't see it, but the fire marshal came, and he comes out and he says, "You're not going to believe this." So the fabric over the tefillin case melted. This melted. The inside melted. And the sofer said the batim and the tefillin were in perfect condition. And he uses it as his miracle when he tells people, you know, when he's having debates with people who don't believe in God. Always be grateful for every minute that God gives you. It is precious. And tell people you love that you love them. Spread all your love. It's like, you just never know. Like, the last thing I ever thought of when I went to bed that Thursday night was we were going to have this, thank God it didn't turn out to be this horrible thing. Only by the grace of God we didn't have it. I have my little cheat sheets of my miracles, which I want to quickly do before the slideshow. Do I have time? No. We're going to do the slideshow first. Oh, yeah?
What was the cause of the fire?
They don't know. There was not enough for the firemen to do a forensic investigation. They think it was his charger, but you'll see. You'll see
was
pictures.
Yep,
yeah, had it been plugged in. Akiva came home at 3:45, and the fire was at 4. So 15 minutes to, well, and if it was charging, it was 15 minutes because the fire alarm went off at 4. So, but we don't know. You'll see. There's going to be pictures. There was mamash, nothing left. Oh my God.
The father who came in tried to save them also was burned alive. So another thing is that there was also a charger on a mattress. But most of the people I see with my children, they leave the charger on and there is no things attached to it. Be aware that there's a lot of electricity coming.
Yes, yes.
And most of the kids forget that. They leave it
in the socket, yeah.
In the socket, and then there's a lot of electricity coming,
yeah,
out of it.
Unplug everything that you possibly can.
Also,
Ricky, go ahead.
So my friend woke up and found her bed on foot in flame because of the heater.
Oh, yeah, those heaters are so dangerous. So dangerous. Ricky, are you here? Okay, Ricky.
Don't
is Ricky here?
Oh.
Okay, so I'm going to quickly do this, and then Ricky's going to do the slideshow. Okay, so I went through the miracles. I didn't write each one because there was too many to even elaborate with. Okay, so number one miracle is that I actually bought a smoke detector and used it. Okay, because I know a lot of people after the fire in New York, they ran and bought smoke detectors. They didn't even put the batteries in. Okay, miracle number two. It wouldn't have helped at all in our fire. No, but we couldn't. It's great to have, but those are really good for small fires. By the 30 seconds from when a fire started, and our fire would not have helped one iota, but it's definitely great to have it and keep it by the kitchen. Okay, the fact that we all ran to my bedroom, because had we run to any other room in the house, we would have been out of luck. Are you done? Is it working, Ricky? Okay, Ricky's going
to
do the slideshow so that.
It's meant to be.
Let's see if it'll work. Let's see. Anything? What time's the next one? Nothing's working? Okay. All right, so miracle number three is I called my neighbor to save us, and he answered his phone. Miracle number four, that the four of us actually were able to escape from the window and that it was not a gas fire. Number five, the front door and the mamad door were both left unlocked. Number six is my neighbor actually runs into a burning house. A total pikuach nefesh to him. I mean, he, as you said, the husband ran in to save his family. He could have been incinerated also. Number seven is my other child was not at home at the time of the fire because there's no way she would have survived by the time the firemen got up there. Number eight is no one was injured by the 50 bullets that exploded. Number nine is we were sent to the hyperbaric chambers, that we lived close enough that, and that the amount of people knew to take us, that Akiva needed that treatment right away. Number 10 is that I had both structural and content insurance. Number 11 is Akiva had no permanent damage. Mamash, a total walking miracle. So buy smoke detectors, check your insurance policies. It's really a good idea to just to go through it and see what you're insured for. Never leave candles burning unattended, and embrace your loved ones and tell them you love them. And I don't think we have slides. Okay.
Okay.
All right. If anybody wants to see the pictures, they are really, let's hope it works.
Give it a try and see if it works. It's like rookie is long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can go on ace.com and see, what's it called? Smoke Detectors and Miracles. And it's like a 6-minute video, and I walk you. I'm in the house after, like right after the fire, Smoke Detectors and Miracles, and you'll see the extent of the damage. But my, if you don't see the, if the slideshow doesn't work, picture a nuclear disaster in my son's room. Mamash, it was kimat, totally destroyed. When they had to do the renovations, they had to take out the tiles and dig 6 feet below the ground, 6 feet worth of dirt, and take it out. That's how the soot, the contamination, the everything, it just, 6 feet, like that's a lot of dirt. Like that's how far it seeps in. And for months we would like take cold cream. Your skin leaches it. It's like really crazy. I'll take books off our bookshelf, like our family photos and whatever. Each time I take it, I have to take a wipe and wipe the outside of the photo album because it just keeps coming out. It's like this invisible thing that, not so invisible. But anyways, I hope that none of you have to experience it, anything like it, but you just never know. I guess the moral of my story is you just never, never, ever know what Hashem has in store for you, and be prepared. Smoke detectors are easy, an escape plan is easy, knowing where your keys are is easy.
I'm gonna show everybody here.
Okay, if anybody wants to see the pictures, I'm happy to explain what they are.